Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots non-profit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on kx935.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
4, 3, 2, 1. It's time for the Friendship Show. Join the conversation. Every week brings a full hour of real issues, stimulating discussion, and the chance to visit with old and new friends. Sponsored by Friendship Shelter, reaching out to rebuild lives for over 26 years, right here in Laguna Beach, California.
Good morning. Welcome to the Friendship Show here on KX93.5. Laguna's only FM. My name is Mark Miller. I'll be your host for the next 60 minutes of community-supported radio. This hour, sponsored by Friendship Shelter, reaching out to rebuild lives for more than 26 years, right here in Laguna Beach, California. We have a great show this morning. Conrad Fuentes is the Associate Professor of Social Work at the School of Social Work for USC, University of Southern California. He's our guest this morning. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll be here with Professor Fuentes. Welcome back. You're listening to The Friendship Show here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. My name is Mark Miller. I'm your host this morning. Our guest in the studio is Professor Conrad Fuentes. He is the Associate Professor of Social Work at the University of Southern California here in Southern Orange County. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, thanks for being here. Do you mind if I call you Conrad?
Please, absolutely.
All right. Good morning, Conrad. That's right. You've been here before, haven't
you?
Yes.
All
right. It is good to have you back. Conrad, one of the reasons that we have you here today is because for some people who are listening to the show, they may realize that I moonlight during the week as the Associate Executive Director of a social service agency here in Laguna Beach. I deal with a lot of social workers, many of them trained by you. And so it's always great to see where those people are coming from and the kind of teaching and leadership that they've been exposed to. Did I get your title right? What is your official title?
Yes, I'm a clinical associate professor with the University of Southern California, and I work in the field department, field faculty.
What does clinical mean? Does that distinguish something?
Yeah, that denotes that I focus more on the clinical aspect of social work rather than, for example, research or other aspects of social work. I'm a licensed clinical social worker as well in LCSW, so I've practiced clinical social work in the field as well.
So that means you're dealing with people.
Yes.
You're not theorizing about what should happen. You're the guy who's actually doing it.
Exactly. I was boots on the ground for many years.
And you're in LCSW?
Yes.
I didn't realize that.
Yes.
You're in LCSW.
Yes.
Can I ask, what's your undergrad degree in?
Human Services out of Cal State Fullerton.
Really?
Yeah.
And how long have you been at USC in this position?
This is my sixth year at USC.
Oh, really?
And then prior to that, I taught for 5 years at Cal State Fullerton in the Human Services Department.
So you're settling in a little bit.
Yeah. 6 years. I'm definitely settling in and enjoying my time there, and so glad to be at USC.
Well, I can see why that would be, because University of Southern California has a national reputation of training some of the best social workers in America. I believe it's considered one of the top five social work schools in the country. Yes?
I think we're in the top 10.
In the top 10?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to say top five.
All right.
Well, top 10. Okay. 10, 5. One of the best schools in the country.
There you go.
All right. For people, though, who don't understand what social work is, can you help us with that? What do social workers
do? Sure. You know, a long time ago, I think people thought social workers mostly handed out government checks or took away kids. And a lot of times you'll hear that from people. And when I used to say I'm a social worker, people would say, oh, you do this or that. Social work has really transformed. It's a very versatile degree and a very versatile profession. At USC, we have several departments. One is the Department of Children and Family and Youth, and the other is the Department of Adult and Healthy Aging, and the other is the Department of Community Organization and Business Innovation. So it spans everywhere from doing clinical work, which is individual therapy, group therapy, family therapy, couples therapy. You can be a clinician, all the way to doing HR, working in corporate responsibility when it comes to giving back to the community. So it's really a broad profession.
I have to say, I've never heard that before. That's very fascinating to me. Do companies, do corporations hire social workers
absolutely.
To help guide them ethically?
Yes, absolutely. So companies, and that's why we have our community organization and business innovation. We at USC have, I guess it's a program or a department that focuses on non-traditional social work. So those are the social workers that are being hired by these companies to focus on corporate responsibility and giving back to the communities that they're working in or profiting from.
And I think that you can see that, right? Because mm-hmm. for those of us who work in nonprofits, we mm-hmm. all have to have relationships with corporate America.
Yes.
And I think more and more, don't you see that corporations are really
absolutely.
Interested in getting connected to the community in a meaningful way, not just making money
yeah.
and moving along?
Absolutely.
I'll give you a quick example. I have to say that for many years, I was not a big fan of, say, the largest coffee company in America.
Uh-huh.
Do you know that coffee company
that
there's one like every six doors or whatever?
Yes.
Because sort of my kind of non-profit perspective was, mm-hmm. oh, they're just making $1 billion and there's
right.
10 guys who are really, really rich and
right.
nobody else is making any money.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually had some experience with that company, met some people who worked there, started
wow.
reading about what they're really doing in the mm-hmm. community. And I have to tell you, I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
of that coffee company now.
And I think a lot of businesses are starting to focus on that. I don't want to say it's become popular, but I think that it's important to give back. It's important not just to come into a community and profit off that community, but to take a look at the community and the surroundings and say, how can we give back to this community? What might be some of the social ills and how can we help?
Think globally, act locally.
There you go.
All right. What do you think it is about USC that sets you aside, that makes you one of the elite educational institutions in this field?
Wow. Well, probably I think it would be multiple things. One, I think that USC really is a leader. And when I say leader, I think very innovative in taking risks in the profession and moving and advancing the profession forward. There's a lot of things that USC did first, I would say. For example, we have what we call our virtual academic center. So you can get our degree virtually. And that's something that started about 5 years ago. And our Dean Marilyn Flynn, was very instrumental in moving that program forward and pushing the social work program into thinking more broadly. And as a result, I think we're in 49 states now that you can get your MSW from USC and complete your MSW in 49 states virtually. And when I say virtually, I don't mean, you know, you're on the computer and you're doing it whenever you have a chance and it's just a bunch of stuff that's uploaded. It's not like that at all. I mean, it's a complete program. It mimics or mirrors the program that we have on the ground. So students on the ground or on our brick and mortar sites do the same program that the students do virtually.
I have to tell you, I am currently auditing a class from UC Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
This whole virtual education thing is just astounding to me.
Yeah,
And it's exactly how you described it. It's certainly the class that I'm taking.
Mm-hmm.
There's lectures that I watch. There's lectures that I listen to. There's reading that I do.
Mm-hmm.
I go to discussion groups online, and I have direct access to the professors who are teaching that class.
Yes.
There's tests for me to take. There's evaluations for me to take. And I have to tell you, I haven't always been the best academic student.
Mm-hmm.
And this format is really comfortable and works for me in a way that, you know, has kept me out of higher education in at different times.
Well, I think once you get to a place where you have a career, it's difficult to go back and put your life on hold and get your degree. And some people can do it, and some students go straight through, you know, out of undergrad into graduate school and do the program. But for others, you know, I think the virtual world is something that really works for them and allows them to go and get that degree. You know, our faculty lecture live when they're doing their classes. And our platform is amazing because you can do exactly what you said. You can put the students into group discussions, have them do group discussions, then come back and discuss, you know, as a whole, you know, what the topic was. So the platform's really amazing, too.
Do you find more and more, because you said, you know, back in the day when you and I were in school, you started college when you were 18, and then you either finished, you know, when you were 21, 22, or you went on until you were 24, 25.
Mm-hmm.
If you really liked it, maybe you hung out until you were close to 30 and got your PhD.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think just because of how complicated the world is now, how expensive education can be, do you find more and more that people have to sort of break up their higher education and say, I can get my undergraduate degree, but then I might have to work a little bit because I'm going to have to pay down some debt. I'd like to go back to school, but I have to be in a different position to do that.
Yeah, I think that happens more and more. But on the ground and in our brick and mortar, and when I say on the ground, we're here in Orange County too. I want to let everybody know we have a campus in Orange County on Von Karman and Michelson in Irvine. And so we have a brick and mortar campus there. That's our Orange County Academic Center. So, but yeah, I think so. I think people do that virtually. I think people do that on the ground. They come back at a later time. Some of them come back with experience, which is wonderful when it comes to doing internships. It's great for the agencies that are taking the students, and it's great for the students that have that experience. But yeah, I think people are coming back. The other thing, though, I think is that this new generation is very comfortable doing things online and virtually, and we continue to move towards that, where there was a time period where it was kind of frowned upon. Now, I mean, other schools, I won't name names, but other schools have also started virtual social work programs and are doing well because students are acclimated to that.
Technology is here, right?
Absolutely.
And everybody knows there's a lot of negative things that come out of that technology, but if we can find a way to use that technology to educate people and get some good work done, that's really the opportunity there.
Absolutely, I agree.
We're talking to Professor Conrad Fuentes. He is an associate professor at the University of Southern California School of Social Work. You mentioned just a few minutes ago that you don't have to go up to L.A.
Yeah.
If you want to be in a classroom and go to a building, you don't have to go up to L.A. to do
that.
That's
correct.
You have an outreach, a department, a school right here in Irvine.
Right here in Irvine.
How many people attend school in your building?
God, we probably have about 300 or so.
Do you really?
Students, yeah. And we have incoming students, you know, which are first-year students, and we have our continuing students, which are our second or third or even four-year students, because our program offers the degree in 2 years, 3 years, and 4 years. If you want to do it full-time, it's 2 years. If you want to do it part-time, it's 3 or 4 years. But yeah, you can actually come to Irvine right down the street from the airport and get your 2 year degree from USC here in Orange County. Your placements, because you have to do internships or you have to do placement hours, would be here in Orange County as well. And we have placements, as you well know, we have placements from West Orange County all the way to South Orange County and everywhere in between.
Well, yes, I will say this. For many years, students from USC School of Social Work who are attending the Irvine campus mm-hmm. do their internship at Friendship Shelter.
Yes.
We rely on them. We usually have two interns. Mm-hmm. They're there for 20 hours a week. Mm-hmm. I think they come in August or September.
Yes.
And they stay until May.
Yes, that's
it's
correct.
It's those two people together. That's a full-time position.
Yeah.
Just, you know, for people who don't understand, I don't pay them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I wish
correct.
I could.
Right.
And maybe that's something that we...
Well, you do an experience.
Well, I don't know. I know, but that doesn't help them put food on their table.
Well,
so
the starving student, right?
Perhaps in the future, that's something that we can work on.
Mm-hmm.
But the amount of work that we expect from those students and the capability that they bring.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do an internship at our program, you're not sitting in the office
no.
filing paperwork.
No.
You, on day one, we will treat you to some donuts and some juice. And on day two, you're going to have some
caseload.
Very, yeah, yeah. You're going to have some very needy people sitting yeah. in front of you saying,
yes.
What can you do for me?
Yes, absolutely.
I think interns like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, first-year students come in and some of them have experience, some don't, some have no experience, and that's perfectly fine as well. A little apprehensive, but, you know, I think we walk them through that process. We're teaching them from day one. You know, one of the classes that I teach is called Integrative Seminar or Learning Lab, which focuses on all aspects of social work. So the students that are being placed in these internships come to class 2 hours a week to discuss internship, to talk about what's going on in internship, to discuss any concerns or any problems that come up with clients, to role play. So we're really there with them through that process. And I think that allows them to be a little bit more open to it. Are some of them a little bit intimidated? Yeah. But they go through the process. And the longer they're in school, you know, through these 2, 3, or 4 years, the more comfortable they are. And I think you see it when they start in August. They're a little bit apprehensive. But by the time we get to May, they don't want to leave.
A huge change.
Yeah.
Do you find in that process of doing that internship that, you know, students go to class, they learn the skills, they have the techniques.
Mm-hmm.
They go out into the world, they practice those techniques. And then isn't a huge part of that learning experience not so much about the skill and the technique that you have, but how you as an individual handle the situation and the issues it brings up for you?
Mm, yeah.
Because you're standing in the middle of crisis.
Absolutely.
Hours yeah. and hours a week.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we allow for that and we also address that. That process is typically what we call transference or counter-transference. Transference is when the client is having an experience that they quote-unquote transfer onto you or an experience they've had in the past, and they place that thought process about that experience onto you and work through it with you. And the reverse of that is counter-transference, is when a clinician, an intern, a social worker has that same feeling like, oh, this is bringing stuff up for me. And the important thing about that is to address that. And so there's room for that in the classroom for them to address that. whether it be with me or with other faculty, and say, hey, this is happening right now with a client. It's very real for me. I've been through this situation, you know, and I need to process it. And so I think it's very important that it's addressed and not just, you know, kind of swept under the carpet. It's very important that it's addressed, but that it's addressed appropriately so the student can continue the intervention. Ultimately, what's most important is to continue to provide the services for the client.
You have to be the rock, right?
Absolutely.
Many years ago, one of the most powerful experiences I've ever had is I was sitting in a group with a group of adolescents, and it was time to share. And there was some tension in the house among the group and those sorts of things. And there were issues that needed to be addressed and brought out. And so the therapist said, no, but you come and sit in the group. I want you to be a part of there, a part of it. I think that you could be useful. And what needed to happen was there was one young man in the house whose best friend had been killed in a car accident caused by a drunk driver.
Wow.
And on the other side of the group, there was a young man who was there because he was the drunk driver of a vehicle that killed a group of young people.
Mm-hmm.
And for these two to, first of all, share their story, talk about their experience and their feelings, how they connect and interact and relate to each other. 15 minutes into it, I'm just sitting in the group in my head going, it's not about me, it's not about me, it's not about me.
Right.
Because the intensity of emotion that can come up in some of these situations is extremely overwhelming.
Absolutely.
And you have to have a tremendous amount of respect for someone who can navigate that without getting lost in it.
Yeah, and I think that's the role of the social workers, to facilitate that experience, to allow both individuals to have their emotions, to have their feelings, whether they be frustration, whether they be elation, but to walk through that process and help them through that process. Not to necessarily, and I think one of the things that's important when you're saying, you know, this is not about me, and it really isn't. It's about the client, and it's important that the clinician always remembers that, or the social worker remembers that, and is able to stay focused on what's taking place. And even if they're reacting to it, it's okay to be genuine and be part of that conversation, but not necessarily take over the conversation. Allow them to have their process.
And where it leads is where it leads, right?
Yeah.
I have to say, in another part of my career, I studied theater and did some acting. And what I really like about therapy and social work and those sorts of things is that when you're sort of learning how to be a good actor, one of the things that they stress over and over and over is you show up for the moment.
Yeah.
You stand in that moment genuinely with openness. And you trust that if you do that, that will lead you to the next right moment that you need to do.
Okay.
Not that different than therapy, really.
Yeah, exactly. Being present. And I think being present is so valuable for the client. I tell a lot of my students, or all my students, I tell them, I say, you know what? Sometimes these children or these individuals that you're doing clinical work with, that 50-minute hour that you spend with them is the only individual time that they will get with somebody that whole week. You know, especially if you work with kids, because if parents have multiple children, it's difficult. It's, you know, it's tough bringing up a family in today's economy, in today's environment. And so, you know, you're constantly running around and parenting. And so when you get to spend, you know, unconditional time with this client, just focus on them, being present at the moment, it's so valuable for the client.
Yesterday was graduation day for USC.
Oh, that's right. And, you know, congratulations to the class of 2015.
How did everyone fare? Did you turn out a good group?
Oh, amazing, amazing group. Absolutely. Absolutely.
How many did you graduate?
From the Orange County Academic Center, we graduated over 100 students.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm.
I do have to say, we have been working for many years with one of your students, David Cox. He's been he's been a guest on this show.
Yeah.
I think he got his undergraduate degree in human services at one point. That's where you started.
Yes.
And then he went off and said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get the big USC diploma.
Right, right.
It's a very prized thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to tell you the truth, we have been waiting patiently for him to finish that very rigorous program.
It is.
So that he can come to Friendship Shelter and work full time. So yeah. I will tell you this. On Friday, your student was a student. On Monday, he has a full-time job and a huge caseload that he needs to deal with.
Waiting for him. But, you know, I bet he is just excited. And congratulations to David. But I bet he's just excited to be there and to hit the ground running. You know, a lot of these students go through the process of graduation. And that's the final... You know, the final goal is to graduate, but the goal right after that is to get a job. So for him to have one right away, that's amazing.
Well, yeah. we're glad to have them. Conrad, you haven't always been a social worker.
No.
One of the things that people talk about sometimes in that field is lived experience and how lived experience informs your work. Mm-hmm. You have some very important, some very intense lived experience.
Absolutely.
I'd like to just take a short break, if you don't mind. When we come back, I'd like to talk about your journey and how you got to where you are today.
Wonderful.
All right. We've been talking with Conrad Fuentes, Associate Professor of Social Work at USC. You're listening to The Friendship Show. We're going to take a quick break right now, and when we get back, we'll talk with Professor Fuentes more. Welcome back to The Friendship Show here on KX93.5. My name is Mark Miller. Our guest this morning has been Associate Professor Conrad Fuentes. He works for the USC, University of Southern California School of Social Work. Conrad, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Before the break, we were talking about this idea that you hear of lived experience. What is lived experience and how does it affect education?
Lived experience, I think, is just what your life has been like and what it has been about. Some of it's positive, some of it's negative, but I think in the end, it's all grist for the mill and it makes you a better social worker. If it allows you to empathize with clients, if it allows you to understand clients better, then it's for the good.
Do you have to sift through your lived experience and understand how it affects you in the moment and the work that you're doing?
Yeah, I think it's important. I think, you know, when you work with clients individually or in a group setting, when you're doing clinical work, whether that be individual, group, family, couples therapy, things are going to come up for you as a clinician. It's very important that you address those, because if not, it can impact the session. And then what can happen is it becomes about you and not about the client. So yes, I think clinicians sometimes need to go get their own treatment and deal with life's issues and life's traumas to be able to work with other clients who have had similar lived experiences.
It was not too long ago, a little while back, I attended a conference where you were one of the guest speakers. And, and at that conference, you shared very openly, very public, your lived experience and how that led you to want to be a social worker and involved in that field. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, as a child, I always say my two dads, because I have a dad and a stepdad, but both of my dads were gang members. And from notorious gangs in Los Angeles. I think by the time that I was old enough to understand, they were kind of removed from gang life, but the damage that it had done was there. So that became part of my life. And when I say it became part of my life, it's because of their inability to deal with life stressors, or how they were taught to, or how they dealt with life stressors impacted me. What do I mean by that? I mean that there was a lot of domestic violence in the home. There was a lot of emotional abuse, a lot of physical abuse. And, you know, later on in my life, because we were on scholarship and I went to a Catholic school for about 8 years, there was some sexual abuse as well. And so I think all that trauma had a huge impact on my life.
To be fair, it can't not, right? I mean, a child can't live that experience and not be profoundly affected by it.
I'd have to agree. I mean, I think kids are very resilient, and I think I've demonstrated some resiliency. But it has been a long, laborious, painful process to get to a place, a good place where I am today.
Can I ask how you internalized or acted out your situation?
Yeah. I think for me, you know, my very first safety, you know, aside from mom, because mom, you know, would do her best, and she had her own trauma experiences as well, but she did her best to try and protect us. But initially for me was food, which was early on, you know, I turned to food, and I was an overweight kid, you know, and I think weight issues have been part of my life until today. But food was something that I turned to. Eventually that turned into bulimia. And I think that self-hatred and that self-feeling of less than, and I was constantly told, you know, you're a piece of, you know what, and you're never going to amount to anything, you're worthless, or... And that was the emotional abuse from my stepdad. And so I internalized that, and the way that I dealt with it was escape. And, you know, the bulimia lasted for about 10 years. And there was further shame because this is in the late 70s and 80s, and men weren't doing that.
I have to tell you, Conrad, I cannot imagine, like you said, growing up in, you know, a gang culture, a young boy with bulimia.
Yeah, exactly. And it was constant chaos in the household. You know, eventually we did move out of the barrio and we moved into a middle-class neighborhood. But things might have looked well on the outside. The problem was that none of the issues or family issues that we had were addressed. The things stayed the same. We just moved to a nicer neighborhood. We were fortunate enough to do that. You know, later on, I leaned towards the violence. I think the rage and anger I had from the physical abuse that I sustained and the sexual abuse that I sustained took me to a place of, you know, expressing myself physically, you know. And when I say that, I used to like to fight, and that's how I got my anger out. And you compound that at the same time, I'm bulimic, using alcohol and some substances, you know, and then I'm going out hanging with the homeboys and fighting, and it was just a bad picture. It was a bad, very bad time of my life, you know. And my biological dad passed when I was 21, and I think 20 or 21, and that's when it got the very worst. And when I say the very worst, I think, you know, that's when I really kind of dove into, and it happened before this, but into the lifestyle, or what you would say the gang lifestyle. And at that time, we didn't particularly belong to any of the local gangs. We didn't like the way they did things, so we developed our own, you know. And one of the things is I've always been as a leader, and I was a leader in that area as well. And so I put together our own crew or gang, and we went about doing what, you know, gang members do. And I'm certainly not proud of that. I don't condone that lifestyle, but it's a period of my life that where I was very lost, you know. And in hindsight, I see how all that trauma impacted that, and especially the sexual abuse. The sexual abuse was later in my teens, and I think that really, with the death of my dad, just threw me into a rage.
What changed?
You know, God, when I think back, I think I stopped using. I really just got tired, you know, of carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders, whether it was leading my homeboys or the gang, whether it was, you know, trying to stay a step ahead of the drugs and the alcohol. It was just so overwhelming that it defeated me. And, you know, I looked at where I was in my life, and that's not where I planned to be when I was a kid. As a kid, I didn't fantasize about being a gang member. I didn't fantasize about being alcoholic or an addict or a bulimic. I didn't fantasize about those things. I didn't fantasize about getting tattoos in a garage with a bunch of my homeboys. You know, I fantasized about being a cowboy, a soldier, you know. And so I think I got to that point in my life where I realized I'm not where I wanted to be, you know. And the first thing I did was I quit drinking and using. And that changed my life dramatically, you know.
How long ago was that?
25 years ago, about 25 and a half years ago.
And like you said, even though that might have been the beginning of the future, you're still working on it every day?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, it's through a lot of people whose last names I don't know, you know, that the reason why I've been successful in that area of my life.
With someone with that lived experience,
what
do you say to young people who are, regardless of class, race, are trapped in that experience? What do you say to them?
You know, the funny thing is it depends on how you look at it. If I'm talking to somebody as, you know, an addict or an alcoholic, and trying to help them from a non-clinical or professional perspective, there might be some self-disclosure there and say, you know, that this isn't the end, that this is the beginning. Who would have thought that 25 years later I'd be a professor at USC? I didn't dream that. You know what I mean? It's simply because of the changes I made in my life. But if I'm acting clinically in the arena of social work, that I don't think I've ever told my clients I was a former gang member, or I've never told my clients I used to drink and use, because it's a double-edged sword. If I tell them that I did, then they can either think, oh, well, he did it and he succeeded, or they can think, you know, see, it's okay to do. So it's a lose-lose. So professionally, I don't self-disclose.
Right. Clinically, don't they say the less is more? The less you have to disclose personally, the better. Sometimes you really need to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think clinically it's more about that relationship and some of the techniques that you use, especially when you think about trauma. You know, it really becomes about acceptance, unconditional positive regard, and congruence. You know, I'm genuine with my clients. I'm very real with my clients. And I think that's what's allowed me to be successful with that specific population. I've done a lot of, my career has been focused on working with gang members, former gang members, and or formerly incarcerated. And now, you know, very fortunate to work with a group of gentlemen that focus on the formerly incarcerated or the reentry population.
I want to talk to you about that a little bit. We're going to take a little bit of a music break. Sure. Do you ever go back to the old neighborhoods?
I have in the past, and some people I still keep in contact with, but not really. You know, the couple times that I went back, it wasn't a good experience. So, you know, I think I moved on. I pray for my friends. You know, a lot of them, most of them are probably dead or in prison. Some of them have made it through and done well for themselves, but the ones that haven't, they're always in my thoughts and prayers.
All right. That's Conrad Fuentes. He's been our guest this morning, talking about his experience and how it led him to be an associate professor of social work at the University of Southern California. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this.
chewing on a piece of grass, walking down the road. Tell me, how long you gonna stay here, Joe? Some people say this town don't look good in snow. You don't care, I know. Ventura Highway in the sunshine, where the days are longer, the nights are stronger than moonshine. You're gonna go, I know.
Welcome back to The Friendship Show here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. It's been a really nice morning here in the studio. We've been talking with Professor Conrad Fuentes, who is the Associate Professor of Social Work for the University of Southern California right here in the Irvine campus. Conrad, I know how difficult and sometimes how emotional it can be mm-hmm. to talk about your personal experience, mm-hmm. what your lived experience has been like up to this point and how it has brought you to this wonderful conclusion. Yeah. Thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you.
I told you off air, I'm already getting text messages and reviews from people saying more of this. We love this man.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for doing that. Yesterday, you graduated your students.
Mm-hmm.
They successfully completed their time.
Yeah.
What are you going to do now?
Oh, summer. You know, there's a lot to do this summer. You know, one of the things, though, that I'm very proud of is a group of gentlemen that I work with. And we have what we call a tri-county collaborative, which is Los Angeles County, Orange County, and San Diego. And I think what we're trying to do is create a paradigm shift as to how people view those that are coming out of or formerly incarcerated or re-entering into society. And, you know, all of us do this work together. It's Steve Kim, who's the executive director of Project Kinship, Mary Vu, who is the clinical director of Project Kinship, Pastor Nati Alvarado, who is with Word of Life Ministries and also with Project Kinship, Robert Hernandez, Professor Hernandez, who teaches up at the main campus, and Dr. Joey Estrada, who teaches at San Diego State. And all of us are working together to really create this paradigm shift, and not just a paradigm shift, but a treatment shift as to how we view individuals that are coming out, or especially after Prop 47, that are being released from jail and prison and might not have any skills or might have, you know, their own trauma experiences, you know, and providing them services, whether that be job training, whether that be clinical treatment, whatever the case may be, kind of like a Homeboy Industries, but here in Orange County. And actually, we've had the blessing of Father Greg Boyle when it comes to Project Kinship. So that's something I'm very proud of.
Would you be so bold as to say that clinicians would largely agree that the prison system has failed at rehabilitation?
Absolutely. I think so. And I think that we as a society are beginning to figure out that we cannot incarcerate our way out of this problem. To me, obviously, I'm biased. I'm a clinician, but treatment is the answer. Understanding trauma is the answer, you know, and we need to take a deep look at what it is that we're doing and what outcomes we're getting as a result of that. As a society, we need to do that.
All right. For people who want to learn more about USC, sure. the School of Social Work, maybe be your student in the fall.
I hope so.
How can they do that?
For our on-the-ground or brick-and-mortar program, they can go to sowkweb.usc.edu. So sowkweb.usc.edu, socialworkweb@usc.edu. If they want to learn about the virtual program, they can go to msw@usc.
Great. When do classes start in the fall?
They start for the on-the-ground program. They start late August.
All right. Do you have some vacation? Do you get a little break at all? Do you do anything fun this summer?
Time off. Absolutely. I'm going to be going to Colorado for the summer to do some fishing and hiking.
Ooh.
Yes, and I can't wait to get out there up into the Rockies and breathe that amazing air. And then I'm going to go on a road trip with my brother up north, all the way to the Oregon border.
Nice. Are you a fisherman?
I like to say that I am.
All right.
Not a very good one.
Because I grew up fishing. Do you know what a walleye is?
Yes.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Now, see, I'm from walleye country.
Okay.
I'll tell you this. Just a couple of weeks ago, my nephew, the youngest Miller man left in the family, just took the largest walleye any Miller man has ever caught in South Dakota out of a lake.
That's amazing.
Huge deal. Huge deal.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of fun.
Yep. All right, Conrad, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It's been great. You'll come back again. Hopefully we'll talk to you in the future.
I would love to be back.
All right, up next, Ida May is here. She's going to do some radio neighboring. You've been listening to The Friendship Show here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We'll be back next week at 9 o'clock.
Thank you for tuning in to The Friendship Show. Join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. for a full hour of real issues, stimulating discussion, and the chance to visit with old and new friends right here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM.